Okay.
Great.
Hey, Frank.
Hello, guys.
Hi, Frank.
Hello. Is it just the three of us so far?
And Karen Holwick?
And Joe Whitting.
Oh, I'm sorry, Joe. Good. Okay.
Mark, if you want to put those call in, you know, you can use star 8 to do that too. That's another way.
Star 8 to do what?
To get rid of the announcements of people coming in.
I tried that and it didn't do anything.
Oh, it did. Okay.
Yeah, I can't get it to work.
Okay, that's interesting. We'll live with it.
Yeah. Okay, Peg, I heard you join, and then somebody else after that?
Caroline Lewis.
Okay, I got you, Caroline.
Kristen Poppleton's here, too.
Okay, great.
Hello, Barbara Mann just came on.
Hey, Barbara.
Hey, Barbara.
How you doing?
Hi, Carol, too.
Hi.
So, I think we'll go ahead and get started. We don't have a lined up this week. But why don't we just do a kind of a quick round if anybody has something to share. Frank, do you have any updates on what's happening in the...
I'm sorry, I missed that, Mark.
Can you give us a little update on what's happening with energy literacy?
Sure. Energy literacy is going to be submitting a version of the document to begin the Federal Science Agency review. I would guess, I don't know when Matthew's going to close out all the text from the wiki and all that, but it'll be sent to the USCCRP principals and May 17th. So if you have anything that you want to provide a comment to Matthew, I would do it well in advance of the 17th. So it's a couple weeks from now.
And has everybody had a chance to take a look at... Sorry, folks, I can't figure out how to turn off the... notifications there. So does everybody know how to get to the Energy Literacy Wiki page?
Yes.
No.
Okay, I'll send out a note just to the Climate Literacy List in case you haven't gotten on the Energy Literacy thread there.
Mark, I've been trying to send those out when I see them, when they come to me. So
right.
I hope them have been sent over the last week or so.
Okay.
On the 2nd, I guess that was yesterday, Scott, you sent something out at 10:55 a.m.
Yep.
Thank you.
I'm also wondering whether, given the timing here, whether maybe we want to set aside some time to review that as a telecon.
I understand your point. Sure that we're going to have an opportunity because... Basically, next week is the week that it needs to be reviewed.
Okay.
Well,
and then it's then moving on to the USGCRP folks the week after.
So what are we doing next week?
I think that we've got somebody on our schedule, but, I'll double-check that while we're talking here.
Yeah.
But if next week is open, that might well be a good idea.
Yeah. I don't think we have anyone scheduled next week.
Okay.
Except two.
I mean, we're still, the timeline is still to have the energy literacy documents finalized for dissemination and beginning use in very early September. So that's still the active timeline.
Yeah, terrific. All right, so anything else from the NOAA Climate Service part of the world?
Well, clearly we're not doing anything to establish a climate service in FY11, given the language that was agreed upon as part of the final continuing resolution for the remainder of the year. We were barred from using any funds to do that this year, and there's a good chance that that carries forward in the FY12 budget process that's underway. But, you know, we'll see. Weird things happen. You know, we're continuing to move forward on that. And, yeah, I guess the only other thing that's sort of related to that is the U.S. Global Change Research Program is working on its strategic plan process, and there is a chapter on education and communications, and we're continuing to hold the line and move forward and things of that nature. So I would imagine those of you who are interested in these types of things, you should pay attention to the 10-year strategic plan for the U.S. Global Change Research Program. I'm not sure when there will be a public phase of that review process, but I think it's going to come out, I would imagine, in the fall. I think there's a legislative mandated 60-day public comment period. That's, you know, somewhere in the September, October timeframe is what I'm hearing. It might be even in August. So I would, you know, I'll, when that comes out, I'll let everybody know that that's coming out and moving forward.
Is USGCRP going to be reauthorized anytime soon, or are they good to go for a while?
There was work in the past to reauthorize U.S. Global Change Research Program and expand its scope and things of that nature. You know, that obviously, with all other things, climate legislative action is, you know, it's hard to imagine that it'll move forward and be reauthorized. But, you know, again, weird things happen.
Yeah.
But I mean, there was a push quite a few years ago to reauthorize it expand its scope and give it a stronger charge and things of that nature. But I can't imagine that would happen right now.
Yeah.
Given all the other things going on.
Right.
Frank, this is Karen. Can you give us just a very short paragraph about how the budget decisions have affected NOAA? I mean, have there been massive staff cuts or... just a general
sure.
idea of what the budget cuts mean to NOAA.
Well, I mean, it's to be determined. We have not really seen how it's going to play out. I think the 20% that some of us were bracing for is not coming to pass. But you know, we are tightening everything we can, the uncertainties about the Office of Education's Environmental Literacy Grant funding is still to be determined. You know, what exactly that is. The role of the GLOW program at NOAA is up in the air. So, but as far as the percentages and hits and tweaks and all that stuff, I mean, we are you know, basically having to give back 5%, if not more. How that's being played out as far as staffing positions is, you know, it's not clear yet. I mean, we have a lot of work to do to figure out exactly the ramifications. And then on top of that, what the, you know, the spending period is going to be really unpleasant. It's because by the time we get our budget and by the time we close out our processes, it's not going to be very long. So it's going to be a frenetic period of time, but it's too early to say, unfortunately.
Karen, this is Peg. Just wanted to add to what Frank has said, that NOAA has so many critical services that our budget really wasn't affected as much as other agencies.
Right.
Would be finding, I mean, who's going to be chopping the Storm Prediction Center of the National Weather Service? I mean, there's some things, there's
right.
a lot of things that they're, you know, they're not going to fool with. So on many fronts, NOAA came out pretty good.
So it sounds like it's at least another month or two away before that crystal ball will be clear.
Right.
Correct.
Okay. Thanks.
And meanwhile, even though you're not allowed to develop a climate service. There's still a lot of climate services that NOAA is obviously providing. And anything you can say about training within NOAA, like with folks from the Weather Service, so that they have a better background about climate science, climate literacy?
Well, so, I mean, the one thing that is true is that for this fiscal year, we are making a priority on internal capacity building relative to climate. Hopefully that effort will capitalize on other activities outside the agency, across other agencies with our group, and so we're working on you know, what are the core competencies for a lot of the personnel, if not all the personnel at NOAA, in whatever capacity they have, to really work with, be knowledgeable about climate. If it's an engagement personnel, if it's a scientist, if it's just a general employee, or if it's somebody who actually has to use climate information to make decisions about conservation or resource management. One other thing that I think a lot of you might be interested in is the executive order on, I can't remember the exact executive order language, but basically we have to reduce our carbon emissions and build our adaptation plans and find our vulnerabilities. You know, the president has said we have to have, you know, pretty much our entire fleet of cars be all hybrid or electric or a blend, or, you know, within a very short period of time. It's it's a pretty bold objective. So there's things like that that are going on inside the federal executive side that are pretty robust. But anyway, I mean, that there's, I don't know if that helps answer your question, but capacity building is definitely something we're working on. But, I mean, it's hard to do something big and robust with very little, if no budget.
Indeed. Peg, do you have anything else to add about what's all going on in NOAA around this?
We do, as Frank said, we do see that building knowledge is something we can do. So we're in the process of completing a needs assessment and a content knowledge assessment, and we'll be using heavily the Six Americas questions so that we can see where the NOAA people, the rank and file, lie along the knowledge and concern levels of climate. So hopefully we'll be able to move that forward this year. That doesn't require any money. And then kind of determine a strategy for how to move forward in helping people increase their climate literacy.
Good.
That's just within NOAA, so,
So you're using some of the same survey instruments or questions?
Yes. We're hoping to at least use, if not we're not probably going to use the entire instrument, but at least part of it.
Yeah.
So that we can do some comparisons of some data.
This is Caroline. And who was that just speaking?
Peg Steffen. I'm from NOAA.
You're from NOAA, too? Well, this is good news. So can I ask you what that will look like when you want to get the lay public more climate literate?
Well, I mean,
that's what we're struggling with.
Well, I mean, you know, Carolyn, the reality is that NOAA, like many agencies, like Fish and Wildlife, National Parks, Forest Service, all have extensive interfaces between the public and the federal responsibilities, missions, if you will. And so we have somewhere in the order of about 1,000 people at NOAA who work with different segments of the public on a regular basis and have it as part of their responsibilities to work with climate. And so you can imagine a National Marine Sanctuaries educator on a boat off the coast of California who are working with people on understanding climate and how it relates to the sanctuary's mission. So helping them, and they've got needs, is the kind of thing we're talking about. National Weather Service, same thing.
This is you, Frank?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay, so the reason I'm asking, Frank, I'm on the board of the APGA, the American Public Garden Association, and we had some meetings with NOAA, Tom Carl.
Yes.
Do you know Tom Carl?
Yes.
Yeah, I was constantly asking for you, Frank. I was begging for your presence. It was in Asheville, North Carolina, February 8th. You were on the agenda, but you didn't make it.
Just so you understand, Caroline, all travel has been removed. That's one of the travel costs are almost vaporized. So we're not going anywhere anytime soon. So that's part of why.
What I'm trying to do is trying to get some robust interpretation in botanic gardens and then in museums and on climate change. And I got to tell you, you know, a lot of the research coming out, and Scott Carley keeps me very busy reading all this great stuff. But so much of the lay voting public's knowledge of science comes from these informal centers that I'm doing a lot with the Clio Institute, but one of the things is really pushing these informal science centers to be creative in engaging and provoking their public to embrace climate change, at least at an engagement level, so they want to seek more information. So I don't know how I can pick your brain and your thoughts, because you have so much experience. I would, you know, just as a board member of the APGA, I think what they're doing is a wonderful first step, but I think they could be doing more.
So why don't we take this offline and set up a call afterward, and I would imagine there's other colleagues that are working on this. Peg is one of them who is working on different aspects of this, and I'd very much look forward to that, and I have been following that research as well, and I agree with you.
Okay, good. And so you're aware of this cell phone tour guide thing they're trying to put together for this? Okay,
absolutely.
Good. Well, then I'm happy. As long as you're involved, I'm happy.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the other thing just to remember, and I think this is a general statement for everyone on the call, that one of the things we're trying to do that rolls out of the tri-agency meeting is to build a community of practice while people are developing products and activities and programs where more people can see, you know, similar programs that maybe something similar in the national parks would actually transfer, or the aquaria would transfer to what you're trying to do in the public gardens. And
so
I think that's great. I don't want to reinvent the wheel every time, so best practices for sure.
Yeah, so Caroline, are you aware of the project Budburst, I assume?
Yes, very aware of that.
Okay, good. So anybody that's not familiar with Project Budburst, it's a citizen science program run out of the National Ecological Observatory Network, or NEON for short, and they do a lot of very interesting work. They've got cell phone apps where you can help record phrenology changes and that sort of thing. Of course, looking at when lilacs bloom and that sort of thing is one way that we can track changes in climate through looking at the changes in the seasons. But a minute ago, Peg mentioned the Six Americas, and Joe, we have Joe with us from George Mason University. Joe, can you give us a little update on what all is going on up your way?
I'm back on. I can talk now. Yes, that Six Americas, as many of you know, is a combination of George Mason and Yale, with Tony up at Yale and Ed Maybach down here. And so I'm glad to hear that's going to be used, because that has a good database already, and it'll be useful to know how the NOAA folks are thinking. Other than that, I don't really have any news. The group is proceeding on a variety of things, but nothing really newsworthy right now.
So I'm not sure if everybody knows your background, and maybe you could just describe a little bit about how you got involved with Six Americas, and in particular the CSAP project, the Climate Change Education Partnership, which I assume that you have some involvement with?
Yes, I do. That's essentially our second National Science Foundation grant. If the background noise is too bad, just give a holler, because I'm the back of a school bus right now going to campus. What some of you know, we have a group at George Mason, the Center for Climate Change Communication, led by Ed Maybach, and we're working on two National Science Foundation grants, one of which is to engage CV forecasters in a survey, which we did a year ago, to find out what their thinking are. Not exactly the Six America survey, but pretty close to it. And then our second one is the group one that, about a dozen groups are having similar grants, and that's to develop a plan to expand our program. So we developed 12 videos of climate change science that lasts about 40 seconds each, meant to be inserted in rather regular weather forecasts. We have a beta tester down at Columbia, South Carolina, who's been airing those for the past year. We surveyed 1,000 viewers before we started, and this June we'll survey those same 1,000 people again and see if they saw them, learned anything, remembered anything, and hopefully that will give us some guidance on the second bit.
Oh, great. So I don't suppose those videos are available to the wider public?
Not yet. We just want to make sure that the survey gets done first. So I suspect that after around July, they ought to be available, and we'd love to have people look at them, give us your feedback, and use them as you see fit on your website or in your various lesson plans.
Yeah, boy, 40 seconds, there's only so much science you can convey in 40 seconds. We look forward to seeing how they turn out.
Right. If you look at the six strands of informal science education, that would be probably strand one or strand two. Get their attention and give them one factoid. So that's about it. But we can always have the weather forecaster lay down some more information on his station's website. So that's part of the design.
Terrific. Yeah, thanks, Joe, for the overview there. And anybody have questions for Joe about the work they're doing at George Mason?
Joe, this is Frank. Did you guys work on the teen knowledge surveys? Because we're looking at both the Six Americas surveys and the knowledge surveys. But was George Mason involved in the knowledge ones as much as they were in the Six Americas?
I don't think so, Frank. I'm seeing Ed here in about 10 minutes, so I'll ask him and get back to you on that. But I don't think George Mason was. I think that was mostly out of Tony's group.
Okay. I mean, I'm finding the knowledge one incredibly valuable in a different way than the value that the Six Americas work. And I guess the other question, Ed, Ed and Tony had worked on kind of getting some periodicity of Six Americas. Do you know what the next iteration is for Six Americas for, you know, being in the field? Is it twice a year, once a year, every other year? Do you know what the periodicity is?
I believe it's once a year, right? I'll double check with Ed on that.
So would that put it at June of this year?
I'll have to double check on that.
Well, if you wouldn't mind sending around some information, if Ed or Tony feel comfortable with that, just
sure.
It would be good to know, because I mean that has it proven itself to be a really valuable effort, and getting some sense of how things are going over time would be most interesting.
Yeah,
yes, they'd be interested in that. And
great, thanks, Joe. Barbara, Ann, can you give us a little update on what's happening at
NASA? The only thing I know about is they're getting ready to review the proposals for this latest publication. I think that's going to happen next week.
Okay.
And other than that, we're still coming down off the PI meeting, huh? But I think our PI meeting sparked a lot of interest around it. I hope it was a good networking. The evaluations are back. I haven't seen everything, but
so what's the RPI meeting?
The PI meeting that we had in at George Mason for the three agencies.
Oh
We're just coming down from that.
And I don't suppose you hear anything through the grapevine about climate education funding through NASA?
No, we haven't. No. Now, there is a solicitation that has just closed, and that's what I think they're reviewing the proposals next week for that.
Okay.
So, did you have something in there, Mark, in the mix?
Oh, not me.
Okay, I think Susan did, didn't she?
She was, I think, peripherally involved with one, yeah.
Okay.
Is that the NASA ICSI one, Barbara?
The NASA
The Innovative Global Climate Change?
Yeah, yes.
Yeah, we have one in with Miami-Dade College and Miami-Dade County.
Yeah, I may have talked to you on the phone. I think you may have called.
Right, yeah, you were. You were very sweet.
Aww. I'll send that one up the line.
Yeah. Well, I'm working on something called the CLEO Project, Mark, that I'd like to talk about at a later date, but just as an overview, I'm trying to do that casting wide nets. I'm trying to go after the lay public and the voting public on climate change engagement, and we're coming up with a youth task force and public engagement forums and models and contests and stuff. And I think it could be really intriguing and interesting. It's pending, you know, funding and scalability and all that, but I think this group would give me some important feedback as to how I think I'm going to approach building this this ripple effect of youth, college and high school kids, as well as supporters engaging their little communities in climate change, trying to set them up for success. I have a team of scientists behind me. We all just went through this Powering Capable Climate Change Educators workshop at the University of Miami, 4 weekends, 50 professionals, scientists and educators and teachers and professors and students, and the group sort of gelled, and I kind of will be the ambassadors for the CLEO project. But, you know, I like to frame things to sort of piggyback on what's really working well out there and what are the best resources that currently exist and what I can shine a light on that's already happening rather than pretend I just invented it. So I'll get in the lineup, but I just wanted to put that out there for now.
Cool. Sounds good.
Hey, Mark, an email just came in from the GLOW program that some of you may find interesting.
Okay.
And it says, GLOBE is pleased to announce the appointment of Dr. Andy Tasker of Warwickshire, England, as the director of the GLOBE program office.
Okay.
So he is now the official director. So that's
anything about him?
Well, I mean, if I remember correctly, he was an influential member in GLOBE Europe, and was the UK country coordinator for a very long time, and, you know, worked in the region also. He's been in the GLOBE community a very long time, knows it, and GLOBE Europe was one of the most healthy parts of the GLOBE program. Why this is significant to what we're talking about here today is student climate research campaign I think we'll be in very good hands with Andy at the helm. And provide some very clear vision, and really to try and take, when we were talking about the Project Budburst, for example, and really trying to take that at an international level, and bringing the international to the U.S. and the U.S. to the international is an important piece of our work. So I think that this is very good news.
Excellent. So those of you not familiar with GLOBE, globe.gov is the website, and the GLOBE program has been around since the early 90s as a program to engage students in authentic science research, although some people over the years have been frustrated that the research isn't always very engaging and not always very authentic. But in any event, GLOBE's been around for you know, going on 2 decades now almost, and they've, as Frank mentioned, there's this student climate research campaign that is geared to start this fall, and they were going to postpone it for a year because of some behind-the-scenes infrastructure issues, but they're back on track to launch this student research campaign in the fall. And our program here at Ceres has been working with them to develop a teacher professional development program to help teachers who are going to be involved with the student campaign, so that the teachers themselves have a good background in the basics of climate science. So yeah. I just looked at the GLOBE website, and there's no notification there about this, but...
I'll forward this to the Climate Literacy Network.
Please, yeah,
so,
great.
So that you can see it. And the other thing is there's a note in there that they're looking for Globe teachers to review the climate science learning activities. So I don't know if there's anybody on the call who meets that mark, but I would imagine there are people within this call who would find that potentially very rewarding to do. It's Globe is in 110 countries. Some of them have languished over time, but really it's a part of the work that we do that we tend to focus mostly on the U.S. programs, and I think that bringing the international to the U.S. is, as a Globe teacher and a Globe trainer myself, was an incredibly powerful tool and really had a profound impact on my students and myself because of the international aspect. And this topic we talk about has that international piece. And I think it's a key strategy that we don't utilize as much as we could. And if this program gets back on its feet, it could be a nice part of the portfolio. So
yeah,
for me.
Yeah, and just a little more background. NOAA was the lead agency with Globe for the first decade or so, and then NOAA got disinvested itself, and the funding. Came from NASA with a little side money from NSF, and now NOAA's back in the mix, right?
Yeah, just the only clarification is we didn't divest. Congress kicked us out.
Okay.
They removed us. They said if you do have anything to do with the GLOW program, we will remove sizable chunks of your budget. So we had to step out.
So, and the GLOBE program office is here in Boulder at UCAR.
That's a good right. story there.
Yes, yes.
All right. Thanks for the update there, Frank. And so anybody else? We've got a little bit more time here, and we don't have a particular agenda. So, Karen, do you have any updates on climate-related efforts? I guess not.
Mark, could I talk a little bit about Capture the Trash?
Sure. Who's this?
Martha.
Okay.
We've been developing a game, Capture the Trash, and it's a virtual game of a virtual city where all of the waste is captured and used. And we've had a lot of pickup on it lately. You know, it's funded by sponsorship because the billboards and all the real-life things appear in the game. And don't get on the mic here on CLN very often, but if anybody would like to talk with me a little more about the potential of this game and the things that are happening around it in terms of, you know, localizing, e-waste centers, and then creating a lot of graphics that relate atmosphere, carbon, and other, chemicals to waste, and also to the usage of water. So it kind of ties it all together, but it's actually more of a very commercial game with incentives and currency and everything. So I really love anybody who would help me with this on a few issues that I've been trying to iron out wants to be on my advisory board, council, committee. I would love to get an email from you.
You send us the URL?
I can send you the PDF, which is it's large, but I'd love to send it out. It's really about 13 pages.
If it's a large PDF, then I don't send it to the whole group because it jams up people's email.
Right, okay.
Maybe you can put it somewhere where people can download it.
Okay, I'll do that. Thank you.
Martha, just send it to me, Scott Carley. And it's scarley@coexploration.net. And I'll just put it up on the website.
There you go.
Yep.
Okay, thank you very much.
Yeah, that's great, Martha.
And Scott, what's happening up your way?
Well, as you know, I'm part of the Clean Project with, and there's about eight resource collectors right now. And quite frankly, that's the focus is is just reviewing an enormous amount of new material that's coming out in the last year since we did our major, searching last. It was almost a year ago. So we have a lot of things to be reviewing, and it changes every day. So that's really what I'm focused on. I guess the other thing that people may not know, our attention in the first year of the Clean Pathway Project, was really on teaching activities, and we're now just shifting to what we call the useful bits, sometimes called the naughty bits, but we try to use the word useful bits these days. These are the videos, short animations, little demonstrations, anything that would be some subset of a lesson and something that would supplement something within a classroom. So, as I say, it could be still photographs, video, animations. I'm trying to think of the other categories we have. And we're just beginning to look at that. And our approach to this is a little bit different than what we did with the teaching activities. The teaching activities, we looked at major collections. So some of us looked at NOAA's, NASA, some of the other large groups of folks who have been developing materials over the last couple of years. This time, we're actually looking at it by the climate literacy principles. So we've taken on, I think most of us have ended up with one or two of the principles, and that becomes our search focus to look for material that, again, are these small useful bits that people can make use of. So we are reviewing those things, just collecting them and reviewing those over the next couple of months. We will be having a review camp at the beginning of August in Boulder, in fact. And that, a couple months after that, probably, and I'm just guessing, Mark, you may have a better sense of this, but it probably will be into October or November, we will be putting a lot of those things up onto the cleannet.org website. So there'll be a collection not only of teaching activities that we've reviewed, but also these useful bits. So it's going to be expanding enormously the utility of this resource.
Right, one addition to that is that we also have a camp here in Boulder this June that's going to be made up of just local folks, and we will continue looking at that camp at some of the resources, the learning activities, including the stellar resources from Andrew, Louise, if you're still on the call, which we weren't able to review in the first round and are definitely in the pipeline for this second round, looking at some of these high-quality learning activities. So right. A lot of those will be reviewed in the June camp, with more of the focus in that camp in August on these useful bits.
Yes.
Well, that's great. This is Lynn, and Scott. There's a movie that might be useful to you. You've probably seen the Young Voices on Climate Change movies. But the Dreaming in Green one has, I think I mentioned before, has been linked to the National Science Foundation website, National Education Association, and National Geographic. I'm working with National Geographic and National Science Teachers Association and National Audubon to develop a curriculum for Whiteboard that's an international curriculum. And so I really love feedback from anyone who wants to be involved in this curriculum. Whiteboard, I think probably everybody knows what it is, but it's sort of a digital board. So you can have groups of people, and they can be interacting with each other in real time and putting data up on the board immediately after you collect it from the individuals who are all, it can be virtual, they can be around the country, around the world, and all working together on some kind of project.
You do that synchronously.
Synchronously. So it's pretty exciting. And National Geographic is now, they're launching it in Australia and Indonesia. So we started it, but we're really working on it in earnest now, and just figuring out what pieces of all the information that, like on the CLN website, those kinds of things. But
Lynn,
in integrating these films.
For that, or are we still too early to sort of announce what's happening?
Yeah, it's just totally in the beginning phases of it. And it's a good time for, where we can all discuss, what are the key pieces that need to be in this, so I really love to get everybody's feedback.
We can schedule something for as it comes together a little bit more.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm only in Boulder for another couple weeks. I'm staying here actually because Alec Lors, the Kids versus Global Warming, he's having a million kid march in Denver. I think it's called the I Matter March now, but there's supposed to be thousands of young people, and
when
they're basically it's on Mother's Day, May 14th, and they're marching to demand a reduction to CO2 emissions. You know, it's about climate change. And so that's a really great education opportunity for all of us if we can somehow piggyback on the publicity that's going to be going around that. And it's not like they're advocating for any legislation. I don't know, about the advocacy thing. But they are simply trying to educate people about climate change and the importance of reducing CO2 emissions.
Yeah. Hey, I haven't seen any publicity about it. If you could send some information out, that would be great.
Okay, yeah, I'll send the link to the group.
Right.
Lynn, I just sent the listserv something that I came across, and which is the Green Power Community Challenge by EPA, and it takes advantage of the renewable energy credit market, which allows people to go 100% renewable in their home for basically the same price as coal. And it's a challenge, and the communities are, I'm in that community that's the highest amount of renewable energy use of any community in the United States.
Wow.
It took me 10 seconds to do. And now I have 100% wind power in my house for my electricity.
Can you send that out to everybody?
I just did.
Oh, okay.
There are ways to leverage off of the renewable energy credit market that EPA has established that make it incredibly easy for people to move forward on these types of things, as opposed to all the really hard stuff with all new windows, geothermal, solar panels on your house, all that kind of stuff. That's real expensive stuff, but this is 10 seconds and same price.
That's fantastic. Okay, and so I'll send this to Alec and ask him to put it in his speech.
If he finds it valuable, look at it, kick the tires, see if it works for you where you are. Different companies are the end users, like TEPCO where I am, have to, by law, accept my request to have renewable energy through this market.
Mm-hmm.
So I imagine that's nationwide. There's a lot of stuff in here that you can see in the... you can take a look at it and see if it helps.
That sounds great. The other thing is, as far as not spending money, is, in Dreaming in Green, I'm sure you've all seen it. If you haven't, it's at youngvoicesonclimatechange.com. But the four girls do an energy audit, and then they save their school $53,000. So that's another thing, just these things, to publicize these things that don't really cost anything.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what Audubon and Earthforce and Globe, that's what they're doing with their energy workshops, which ties into basically science education, but focused on energy and climate.
Right.
Super. So anybody else that hasn't had a chance to talk this morning, Louise, are you on the line still?
I'm muted.
Okay.
Yeah, we're getting ready to have a meeting in Lincoln where we're going to be finishing the revision of our new resources. So we're excited about that, and we'll be working on that and hopefully they're online now in draft form, but we're hoping to get them finished by summer to have them in a final draft. This is a set of climate change resources based on the four spheres and the unit on energy.
And this is from your NOAA funding?
Right.
Good. Definitely look forward to seeing those.
Yeah, we're excited. We field tested them. Teachers have been very excited about them. We had a field test workshop, and then that draft was used this year with our Climate Change Student Summit Professional Development, and the teachers and that involved in both of those workshops were really excited about them. We've gotten some good feedback and are ready to finalize the last version.
Okay.
That's great. Louise, is that something that could be integrated, or does that have to be like a standalone? Or should maybe just have a, if we could have a resource section, maybe that's a way to handle it, you know, to just have a link to it?
Sure. It's on our website right now, but like I said, it's in draft form, and mm-hmm. the way we developed it was around objectives that can be used either independently and woven into a curriculum. We tried to keep it very flexible, or the whole thing as a climate change curriculum, but very few teachers have that kind of freedom to do that. So most teachers are using it, plugging in the activities into existing curriculum where the objectives meet what they're teaching. Mm-hmm. So we're trying to make them closely related to national standards and to the essential principles of climate change and atmosphere and earth science and ocean literacy.
Great. Okay.
Good. All right. Oh. So, Louise, remind me, you're coming to the review camp in August, right, for CLEAN?
Yes.
Okay, good. We'll send you some more details. Frank, are you coming?
I'm still trying to get my babysitting basically covered, right. But I'm 99% going to be there.
All right.
Good. I have to get somebody family related because my wife's going to be in Costa Rica with students.
Okay, I just wanted to get you on the record on tape. Same.
This is being recorded, isn't it? 99% yes.
Very good. Loud and clear.
Hang on. This is Caroline. Frank, where are you going in Costa Rica?
I'm not going. My wife is. She's going down to the Joaquin. She's going to the Joaquin River.
All right. I got these friends in Costa Rica. Does anybody work with grad students in science? I got an all-expenses-paid scholarship for a minority student to get immersed with a graduate student to get immersed in ecological studies and climate change studies on a very vast scale, and it's in the Grand Teton. But it just opened up, and they got to be there by the 15th of May. If anybody just thinks of anyone who works with undergraduate students in any science who would like that experience. Just shoot me an email, please.
Mark, wouldn't Boulder be a great place for that?
Yeah, possibly. A little late in the going, though, to try to find...
Yeah, it just opened up, so it's sort of like, if we can fill it, great. If they can't. I also have a chance for a middle or high school science teacher to spend 2 weeks in Costa Rica in the rainforest there, learning inquiry-based science. I don't know, does your wife teach, Frank?
Yes, but she's a Spanish teacher. Maybe the right way to handle these kinds of opportunities, which are wonderful and amazing, but very fast turnaround, is to just send out a request to the network and see if a lot of people have lots of different... There are a lot of trollers in this network.
Very good point. Good point.
Yeah, this is Don. I'd be glad to forward along that info for science teachers to the various listservs I'm on. So if you just send it to the CLN list, I can do that.
Yep.
All right.
See, there's one of our trollers right there.
Exactly.
I've been quiet today.
No, that makes sense. Thank you.
So we've got a few minutes left, and I just wanted to mention a couple quick things. We're in the process of developing a CLEAN Facebook page. And we'll send a note out fairly soon. We're struggling because some of us are just not that Facebook savvy, and we're working with some young people in their 20s and 30s that are extremely Facebook savvy. But so we're learning from them how best to use the tool. We'll be asking all of you to friend us on Facebook.
And like.
So we'll stay tuned for an announcement about that, and we'll be linking my climate literacy blog into the Facebook page, I think it'll hopefully also be an opportunity for sharing information such as we've been talking about on this call today. And a couple other folks haven't chimed in today, Carol or Linda, or anybody else that's on the call, do you have any news for us?
I'm sorry, I don't have anything to share at this time.
Yeah,
okay.
nothing new.
All right, Don?
Yeah, this is Don Dugan-Hass from the Museum of the Earth. We're gearing up more on our Marcellus Shale outreach, and we've been, over the year or so, we've been working on this, and Marcellus is a gas-rich shale that underlies most of Pennsylvania, part of New York, part of West Virginia, and part of Ohio, and is thought to contain about as much energy reserves in natural gas as Saudi Arabia has in oil, and people are either make up their mind what they think about it as soon as they hear about it. They either are delighted about the economic possibilities or dismayed about the environmental possibilities, and it's a very complicated issue, and what we're learning isn't a big surprise to most folks on here is that most folks don't have much of a clue about where they're getting their energy now, and in order to decide what you think about the Marcellus Shale in a reasonable way, it makes sense to understand where your energy is coming from in status quo, and so we're gearing up on working on that.
Okay, excellent. Yeah, it's certainly an issue out here in Colorado as well.
Yeah, well.
All right, so I think we're not quite up at the top of the hour, but any last bits of information here? All right, so I guess
goodbye.
If Lynn is leaving, then we can...
Yeah, I think we're done. Time's up.
That's the answer.
All right.
Thank you, Mark. Thank you very much.
Yes, thanks, Mark.
All right, talk to you all soon.
Hello, this is Martha.